We in AA know that AA could never have grown into what it is today if we had not had the help of qualified people outside of AA. Doctors particularly. When Bill, one of our co-founders, had his idea as he lay in this alcoholic ward, and this idea of AA began to be conceived, he felt that he saw in it something good. He had had a complete change of attitude. And when his doctor came by to see him the next morning, he asked him if that wasn't insanity. And his doctor answered him by saying, "Bill, if that's insanity, you better hang on to it." We've had the help of many doctors, particularly those in the psychiatric field, and those who are working in our state institutions and in private institutions. Dr. Jackson, our next speaker, is not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He is the superintendent of our state hospital over at Rusk. And we've asked him to talk to you and to us tonight about what he feels and thinks and knows about the problems of alcohol and alcoholism. In all probability, he'll make you a good AA talk. Dr. Jackson.
Chairman Vick, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I'd like to express my sincere appreciation to you for this honor which is accorded me in allowing me to talk to this group on this sixth annual convention of Alcoholics Anonymous, state convention. It is truly an honor, and I want you to know that I accept it as such. One of Shakespeare's characters made this statement. He says, "Some people are born great, some achieve greatness, and still others have greatness thrust upon them." And I feel that on this occasion, I have had a great honor thrust upon me. I've been looking forward some time to appearing with you at this meeting, having been notified quite a while ago that it was going to be a very nice meeting, that it would be a fine group of people here, and I had no idea just how large a crowd would be here. Right at this time, it would be very appropriate if somebody got sick and needed a doctor. I'm always at home a little bit more when I'm using the scalpel or knife. I not only do some psychiatry, but I am a general practitioner, and I do occasionally take out an appendix as well. I would like to congratulate each of you members of AA, first for your sobriety on this occasion, and second on account of this annual convention. A convention just does something for us. When we can meet with our friends in the medical profession or in the profession of law, it's a wonderful thing to talk to people who speak your own language. And so I'm certain tonight that you are happy to be with a group of alcoholics and who can speak your own language. They know what you have gone through with. I want to compliment the large number of non-alcoholic members who are here tonight, the non-AA group, who have come along with you to this convention. I certainly feel that public education, and as our last speaker has so ably said, we need knowledge. We combat ignorance with knowledge. I think that it is heartening indeed. It should be heartening to each of you Alcoholic Anonymous members to find so many of the general public interested in the problem of alcoholism today. I see in the audience a few graduates of the Rusk State Hospital, alumni of the institution down there. And I saw one fella a while ago. I couldn't call his name, but I never shall forget him. On one occasion, I asked the nurse one morning about him, says, how is our good AA friend getting along? And she says, well, he's just getting along fine, says he's regaining consciousness very well. Says, when I tried to give him his glass of medicine a while ago, he tried to blow the foam off of it. I'm going to ask him what his name is before I leave. I don't recall names very well, but he certainly was a very fine patient, and I am very happy to see him at this meeting tonight. I hope that you didn't come here expecting to hear a doctor make a very lengthy speech, because I certainly could not if I wanted to. And I guess that I ought to raise my voice a little bit more at times. A little ranting and raving sometimes might help. But that reminds me of, on one occasion, an Indian who had been to a church service. And on this Sunday morning, the preacher waved his hands wildly, and he shouted a number of times. And the Indians did not seem to be very greatly impressed with the message. But afterward, one of the good brethren asked him, said, well, Chief, how did you enjoy the services today? And this was his reply: high wind, big thunder, no rain. I wish there could be a little rain tonight, because I would like to drop a few pearls, if I might, which could be of some help to each of you. I certainly feel that the problem of mental illness is a major one today, alcoholism being, of course, only one type of mental illness. It has been estimated by a number of people that mental illness is our number one public health problem in the United States today. More people are affected with mental illness today than those having polio, heart disease, and tuberculosis combined. One out of every 20 people will someday need to spend some time in a mental hospital. One out of every 10 people will need the help of a psychiatrist because of some emotional or mental illness. 53% of all hospital beds today in the United States are occupied by mentally ill people. One out of every five families have or will have a member of that family who is mentally ill and in need of hospital care. In 1948, which is the last year on which we have complete statistical information, there were over 300,000 mental patients in state hospitals in the United States, costing the taxpayers over $300 million. Naturally, I'm happy to say that not many of these patients were alcoholics, but I would call to your attention the fact that a recent estimate states that 70,000 alcoholics move in and out of our jails daily, and it costs approximately $13 million annually to care for the alcoholics who are in our state hospitals. The exact number who are in state hospitals, I am not able to tell you. We do know that there are some state hospitals who do not like to accept alcoholic patients. I think that there is just one reason for that, and that is a lack of education, even on the part of we doctors. We have been hesitant to accept alcoholism as a disease. It has been hard for people through the ages to accept all forms of mental illness as a disease. We look back to the early history of civilization in any great country, and we will find that the people of those early days have thought that all forms of mental illness were caused by demons. We find that even after the time of Christ, after the Christian era, that the demon idea of the origin of mental disease did continue. Hippocrates, the father of medicine, made this statement that all diseases were caused by bodily diseases or bodily causes. All diseases had a bodily cause. But even he stated that epilepsy was a sacred disease because the cause of it was unknown. There is a tendency on the part of doctors and the general public, when the cause of a condition is unknown, to not accept the true facts which are known about that disease or condition. We know that today, you know, and I know that alcoholism is a disease. The cause of alcoholism may be like the cause of many other diseases. There may be multiple causes. No two alcoholics have exactly the same general physical makeup nor mental makeup. And their problems may differ in many respects, but in others they have very similar problems indeed. We need only to hearken back a few years when the cause of pneumonia was not known. We did not recognize the specific cause of pneumonia. We didn't know that there was a pneumococcus, oftentimes which caused it, sometimes the streptococcus, different types of organism which could cause a true pneumonia. But today, our treatment is much more specific since we have penicillin, sulfa drugs, streptomycin. We recognize that we are curing many more patients today with pneumonia than we did formerly. But certainly, we must not depreciate the value of the treatment which was given even before the exact etiology or cause was known. And so today, although we do not have a medical cure for alcoholism, and I might say that about all that I know about alcoholism,
I have learned from a group of alcoholics. We do not know the cause in many instances, and neither do we have a specific medical cure. And yet, we must not forget the fact that oftentimes the treatment given can be very effective in lessening the symptoms of the disease and can hasten a recovery or a return to sobriety. Someone estimated, and it was a man in a doctor in Ohio, that 50 million people use alcoholic beverages today. There are 3 million heavy drinkers and 750,000 or more chronic alcoholics. Those figures vary with each one who gives the estimate. This doctor was Dr. Inlow of Topeka, Kansas, rather than Ohio. In 1940, the wage loss due to alcoholism was estimated as $432 million. But enough of those statistics. You know more statistics concerning alcoholism than I know. There are a few things which, to me, should make us give quite a bit of consideration to the treatment problems associated with alcoholism. I very frequently find that patients who come to the Rusk State Hospital are quite upset because they have been sent there by jury trials. Some of them have been sent there by 90-day commitments. And I am very happy to state that tonight I was presented a copy of the bill which has been passed and signed by our governor, which will allow us to continue to accept alcoholics much in the same manner as we have been accepting them here in the East Texas State Hospital, or at the Rust Texas State Hospital. And I call it East Texas because it does serve quite an area throughout East Texas. I'm very happy that that bill has been signed by our governor, which will permit us to continue to accept our alcoholics as voluntary commitments. I will return to that, however, very shortly. Alcoholics sometimes, when they are in contact with mental patients around a state hospital, resent the fact that we speak of them as mentally ill. I believe, however, that most alcoholics today, most members of Alcoholics Anonymous, recognize that there are numerous types of mental illness. The minor forms of mental illness, especially the psychoneuroses or neuroses, it has been said that over 50% of people who go to see doctors today have an emotional problem, and the most of that group have a psychoneurosis or a neurosis. Now, what is a neurosis or psychoneurosis? Let's just call it neurosis. That's a little easier term to say. What is a neurosis? Is it insanity, the old term insanity, which we do not like, but use it because it's still used in legal terminology? No, it is not. A neurosis is a minor form of mental illness, which may be rather incapacitating to the individual. It keeps them from living a full life, a happy life. And certainly, they are sick people, and they need medical attention. Now, there are many types of neuroses or psychoneuroses. While in the Army and stationed in India, we had the unhappy privilege of receiving a large number of troops who had been landed at the Mishinaw airfield, that's the capital of Burma, and the Jap planes had come in with our planes on that occasion and bombed, strafed the airfield, and killed quite a few soldiers who had just been flown in there from one of the larger cities in Burma. And they had been told that they were going there for jungle warfare training. And they, supposing this to be a dry run,
did not even think to lie down, attempt to get in a slit trench if there had been any around the airfield. But many of them saw their buddies shot down or killed there and in cold blood, and they simply could not stand it, and they broke down mentally. They were brought immediately, within a very few hours, to a general hospital, the 69th General Hospital, and many of these boys had a true neurosis, psychoneurosis. Shell shock was what it was called in World War I, and many of these cases were completely rehabilitated. All we had to do with them, since their experience had just been a few hours before, was to give them some truth serum, as you would call it, sodium amytal interview, and let them relive their battle experiences. Let them tell of what had happened to them when they landed at Mission All Burma. And let them get it off their chest. We say let them aerate or talk freely. And afterwards, although some of them had come in and said they could not walk, that they were paralyzed, some of them would come in with an arm that, to all intents and purposes, was completely paralyzed. And in that state, we could have removed the arm, and they would not have experienced any pain. The anesthesia was so intense. And yet, with the power of suggestion, while they were under this truth serum or sodium amytal, those boys could get up and walk to the door. They could walk around their room under our direction. And then, after getting this insight into their condition, after the effects of the medicine had worn off, and their buddies telling them, "Why, sure, you can walk. We saw you walk. While the doc was in here, you walked over to the door and back." And in most instances, at least 90% of those cases, we were able to return them to the front within a period of 2 weeks' time. In World War I, we did not know of the value of early treatment. Consequently, many were returned to the continental limits of the United States and were permanently ill because of a delay in their treatment. Now I would like to say to you tonight that I believe this. All cases of mental illness, whether they are alcoholism, whether it's a form of schizophrenia, manic depressive psychosis, any mental illness, we need to tell our people. You need to tell your alcoholics that the earlier they get treatment, the more likely they're going to get well and stay well. Now, I recognize the fact, as you do, that an alcoholic must want to get well before you can help him in AA or before we can help him in a hospital. He must recognize the fact that he is an alcoholic. He must have a sincere desire to get well. Well, it's possible that we may have to let them go a little longer than we'd like to, but I say that the earlier that we can get an alcoholic and give him his proper treatment, the more likely we're going to get him to be a dry alcoholic. And certainly that is true in the treatment of all forms of mental illness. I wish there was no stigma attached to being a patient in a state hospital. That stigma results because of the fact that prior to 1940, throughout the world, there was very little which could be offered as treatment in our mental hospitals, with the exception of just good custodial care. I would like for you Alcoholic Anonymous members and friends to help us correct in the minds of the people that our state hospitals today are not insane asylums. The word asylum itself, it would not be objectionable because it means a place of refuge. But it has been used so long in connection with insane asylum until people connect the two words together. And certainly, our state hospitals today should not be called nut houses or insane asylums. We are more than a place of refuge. We are a place where patients
come and get treatment, and where many of them get well. We speak of them ordinarily as arrested cases rather than cured patients. I wonder how many people in Texas today can realize the volume of patients who are going into state hospitals. I wonder also if they can realize the large number of people who are getting well and going back home and living happy lives with their families.